It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, October 27th. This year, lawmakers finally gave Oregonians permission to pump their own gas, a decision that some celebrated and others bemoaned. Now, a labor union is working to undo that new policy. And in Portland, a plan to relocate city council offices during major city hall renovations has pitted some politicians against each other. But as the city barrels towards a major government overhaul, there appears to be some agreement on the horizon. We'll get into all of this today on the podcast. I'm OPB Portland politics reporter Alex Zielinski.
And I'm OPB state politics reporter Dirk Vanderhart.
So Dirk, after years of talking about it, it looked like lawmakers finally settled the debate over self-serve gas fueling this year. Drivers throughout Oregon have been able to fill up their own tanks since early August, but we're learning that it might be short-lived, right?
Yes, potentially. This law has been trucking along since August, but yesterday, the state's large grocery workers union, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555, who we have talked about a lot on this podcast lately, submitted a ballot measure that could change that. If this makes the ballot, it would ask voters to reban self-serve fueling in Oregon in next year's election. You know, this is largely a union push, as I've said, but it's got another participant who some of our listeners will know. Former Portland Commissioner Steve Novick has signed on as a chief petitioner. He says he's concerned about allowing self-serve gas because he kind of liked the whimsy that Oregon had banning people from fueling up on their own.
So Oregon had been one of the few holdouts in keeping a ban on self-serve fueling. Just us and New Jersey had banned that until this year. Why was Oregon so late to go this route?
You know, I think that's a question a lot of people have asked, though, as we've talked about before, plenty of Oregonians, many people listening to this, will fiercely defend the policy of requiring fuel attendants. It's a policy that began more than 70 years ago, really as a function of concerns about safely handling this very flammable substance, which is gasoline. Actually, written into state law are a whole variety of potential dangers from fueling up that lawmakers have worried about over the years. That includes inhaling noxious fumes, slipping on a slick surface, becoming the victim of a crime because you're outside of your car. You know, law actually also raises the specter that children being left alone in cars while their parents gas up is unsafe, or that elderly people have a hard time pumping their own gas on their own, which is obviously a real concern. In short, Oregon has found a lot of reasons over the years to justify banning self-serve fueling. Though, you know, in recent years, we did offer some exceptions. There were some emergency periods during COVID or for wildfires. There are exemptions in more rural parts of the state. So we've eased up a little bit. Now we've eased up all the way, but there is just this long history here.
So I mentioned it briefly at the top, but can you give a rundown of the law that the legislature passed this year?
Yes, this was House Bill 2426. I think actually it's safe to say it was probably one of the bills that got the most interest from the public in this year's session. And what it did was allow gas stations throughout Oregon, not just in, you know, some rural areas, to designate up to half of their pumps as self-serve. So stations in the populous areas west of the Cascades and some other areas are still required to employ fuel attendants to staff half of their pumps. But now people who prefer to fuel up on their own or who perhaps don't want to wait for an attendant also have the ability to do it themselves. This is a bill that passed with bipartisan support, but it sort of came down to the wire. Governor Tina Kotek publicly considered vetoing it. She actually asked Oregonians to write to her office with their thoughts, and her office says it received thousands of messages on both sides of that issue. In the end, though, she did opt to sign the bill. It went into effect August 4th. And I think you hear differing accounts of how this is working so far. Some people who are against it have suggested that, you know, you can find stations flouting the rules, not actually offering attendance even though they're supposed to. But, you know, basically for the last almost 3 months, Oregon has been fueling up on its own. We have not been hearing weekly stories about major gas station fires or people slipping and falling all over the place or any of the other things that people have worried about.
So the law itself seems kind of like the best of both worlds. You know, if you don't want to wait for an attendant, you can fuel up on your own. And if you want to stay warm in your car, that's possible too. There's options. So why does the union so strongly oppose this?
Right. Yeah, I mean, so first of all, the union represents some fuel workers. As I said, it primarily works in grocery stores. But remember that some grocery stores like Safeway or Fred Meyer offer gas stations. So UFCW says it has an interest in preserving those jobs, which it thinks are being sort of slowly eliminated by this law. More generally, though, the union is arguing that there's just very little upside to self-serve fuel. It says the new law hurts jobs, like I mentioned, but also raises some of these safety concerns that are embedded in state law, and also that it could create more hurdles for elderly people or people with physical handicaps who can't easily pump their own gas and now just have fewer pumps with attendants. So maybe they are having to wait longer. Maybe they are being disproportionately impacted. The union argues, you know, this is really just a way to allow gas stations to make more money because fuel still costs the same. They don't have to employ as many people, and they kind of argue it's a cash grab.
Well, so as you noted, the union represents some gas station workers, but that union didn't actually oppose the self-serve gas bill this year. So why is it coming up now? Why didn't they oppose it then?
Mm-hmm. And that's a point proponents of self-serve gas have made since yesterday. I mean, this is sort of in dispute. What UFCW's political director, a guy named Mike Salvaggio, says is that actually the union was concerned about this bill. The union wanted to oppose this bill, but that it deliberately held off. And it did that, he says, because UFCW had another bill it was hoping to pass this year. That bill had to do with helping cannabis workers unionize. So according to Salvaggio, he had a deal with House Democratic leader Julie Fahey that the cannabis bill that the union wanted would pass as long as the union didn't come in and try to kill this gas bill, which Fahey was a chief sponsor of. But as we have talked about on this podcast, the cannabis bill did not pass. And because it didn't pass, UFCW tried to recall State Representative Paul Holvey. That is something I think we spent two podcasts on at this point. The recall wound up forcing an election, and it got trounced. So now UFCW is back saying it was the victim of trickery on the gas bill. It still opposes self-serve fuels, and it's going to undo self-serve fuels. We should note that Fahey very, very much denies being involved in any sort of deal like this. She says it was, you know, this is 100% made up. She doesn't play those games, basically.
So what are the supporters of self-serve gas saying about this attempt? And what's the likelihood that Oregonians will actually vote to support it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people were caught off guard by this. The Oregon Fuels Association, which represents gas station owners and backed the bill this year, has called it a power grab by the UFCW. But, you know, at this point, I am not getting the sense that many people are worried. And that's for a couple of reasons, really. The first is that UFCW has only about 8 months or so, maybe 9 months, to collect more than 117,000 signatures. That is something that is likely to be expensive. It could also be a time crunch because this is, you know, it's a lot of work to do. But, you know, I think the union has proven that it's willing to spend a lot of money to collect signatures. So it's likely possible. The other reason, though, is polling just suggests Oregonians actually support having the ability to pump their own gas. Polling from 2021 showed almost two-thirds of people liked that notion, and that it was especially popular when there was the option, when they could pump their own gas or they could go to an attendant. People basically seem to think that that was fair and a good deal. So even if this does make the ballot in 2024, it's just not clear how viable it is. What is not up for debate is that this is just another good old opportunity for Oregonians to argue about pumping their own gas and what makes us special and all the things that people seem to get really, really worked up about, if my Twitter mentions are any indication.
Well, speaking of Oregonians loving to quarrel, let's move to Portland City Hall, where there have been some spicy debates recently. If you remember, Portland voters approved a plan to expand the size of Portland's government last year from 4 city council members to 12 by 2025. That plan requires some serious construction at City Hall to make space for that larger body in council chambers and the council offices. And the idea, which is right now being led by Mayor Ted Wheeler, was to temporarily move council offices by the end of this year to last throughout the renovation. But a number of city commissioners rejected that plan in a pretty heated meeting last week.
Right. And, you know, this is something that has made me wonder some things, right? Moving is annoying. Everyone knows moving is annoying. But this just seems like it has to happen. And for people who haven't been into Portland City Hall, I mean, the basic layout is there's a ground floor, then there's a second floor where the city council chambers are and the commissioner's offices are. And there are four city commissioners right now, meaning there are four fairly large offices, one in each corner of the building, that have their own sub-offices, and that's where staff works. But they're pretty clearly designated for four elected officials at this point.
Not 12.
We need 12. And so, you know, what is the commissioner's reasoning that somehow this renovation is beyond the pale?
Yeah. So according to all four city commissioners, they're in agreement here. Moving their offices to another city building, even temporarily, would be very disruptive to their workflow. They argue that the layout of City Hall, the second floor kind of connected hallway offices, leads to really effective leadership, and that could be squandered if they move to another city building with a different floor plan for a few months. Here's how Commissioner Dan Ryan put it.
We really do thrive in the way it's currently set up to be productive for the people of Portland. So that will be a big sacrifice, and I can guarantee you it will be a production drain, efficiency drain, and probably a pretty big morale drain as well.
Which, you know, I could see that argument working maybe 5 years ago. But since 2020, City Hall has been kind of a ghost town. You know, half of the staff are still working remotely. The traffic between council offices and these, like, you know, organic hallway chats that a lot of commissioners say are so important, they aren't really, it's not a thing right now. It's not happening. So it's hard to understand exactly where that's coming from. And to be clear, the proposal that they have where they want to stay in their offices right now, their four offices, and just like hand that over to the newly, you know, tripled in size commission, that wouldn't stop the planned renovations on council chambers. So what I'm saying is the commissioners say they'd be fine working in an active construction site. Even they say they don't mind a little bit of dust. They also argue that all of their four offices, like you said, are completely ready as is to meet the needs of all 12 future city council members. And like you said, there's this floor divided into four different offices that have each of their own like kind of sub offices within there, a shared conference room. It's very clearly meant for four different departments, not five. And they say that this could save the city a lot of money. So, you know, why not do it?
I mean, I kind of sympathize with Dan Ryan there because, like, I remember covering City Hall, and my go-to move was, like, there was this bench right by the bathroom, the men's bathroom on the second floor. If you needed someone, you could hang out there long enough, and that person would basically be walking by. And there is this culture where you can just kind of hang out in the hallway and find the people you need in City Hall. As you point out, though, things are different after COVID. And guess what? I mean, without getting too heated here, like, change is hard. You don't just radically shift an entire city governance without some feathers getting ruffled and maybe some inefficiencies, I would think. So, long way of asking, what kind of response are Ryan and his colleagues receiving?
Well, the loudest response is really coming from the city facilities staff, who say that their offices, these four offices, really need to be remodeled to accommodate for this expanded council, according to their plans and the strategy that they have with the construction team they've acquired. They also say that these offices are overdue for some security upgrades, for some, you know, air conditioning updates, some new cable wiring, new Wi-Fi. And they estimate that delaying any of those renovations until, say, the new council moves in and realizes that they need different spaces, that could cost the city a lot more money instead of doing that at the same time that you're doing renovations to the council chambers. So the proposal also just felt like a non-starter for Mayor Wheeler. He doesn't really see how moving offices could impact workflow. You know, to be fair, he's on the third floor and doesn't, you know, experience that same kind of second floor energy that we were talking about. But, you know, the entire council meeting on this topic last week really ended in standstill and disagreement, with the mayor wanting offices to move as soon as possible and commissioners saying that they don't really need to move at all. All of this while the construction team that was hired to do this work, you know, sat at the table looking pretty confused about what they were supposed to be doing next.
I mean, this isn't like a theoretical thing, you know, years in the future. It has to basically be operational in about a year. And yet we are, you know, knocking our heads against a wall like this. Does it seem like the city is going to be able to resolve this in time to get this back on track?
So If you asked me this last week, I would have shrugged. I'm not sure. But now we're a week out from that conversation. It seems like there's been some more consensus. The mayor has been meeting one-on-one with commissioners earlier this week, and they seem to have settled on a plan, a happy medium, to move out into temporary offices starting July instead of the initial plan, which was by the end of this year, which is what Wheeler wanted. And if they move out in July, that means their offices should be ready in time for the new council. So it feels like this isn't going to derail the entire plan.
Gotcha. I mean, there is probably a lot else that needs to be in place by the start of 2025. It's just, as I keep saying, such a seismic change. City hall construction is one of them. What else needs to happen between now and then? And are there more of these fights on the way for whatever those things are?
Yes, 100%. So this is just really the first hurdle in more council kind of conversations that are expected to be just as spicy. Next week, council's meeting to discuss a plan on how to restructure the city's administrative leadership. That's because one of the voter-approved changes in that measure that I mentioned was to hire a city administrator who will oversee all bureaus. And right now, bureaus are overseen by elected city officials, city council members. So there's going to be a big need for a big leadership restructuring that needs to happen before 2025. And it's something current council members are pretty nervous about, since it means probably giving up oversight of their bureaus before the end of their term to make kind of a smoother transition into 2025. So that's going to be another polarizing conversation.
And meanwhile, let's remind people that we have a homelessness crisis, an addiction crisis, countless things that really
we
do need
potholes.
City commissioners' attention besides some of these fights.
Yeah.
You know, all the city commissioners say they want to honor the will of the voters who have approved this overhaul. It doesn't always seem like that in the arguments they're making or some of the foot dragging that we see happening. So what is the end game here? What do you think they're trying to gain?
I mean, I think they're trying to stay employed. You know, I think in terms of this coming debate specifically around bureau oversight, it's about making sure that these city commissioners' records are strong as they kind of gear up for a reelection campaign. We all know, or we know that at least most commissioners are trying to stay in City Hall after next year. We know Mayor Ted Wheeler has decided not to. And a number of commissioners have these certain pet projects that they've really touted for a while and they really want to complete and kind of stamp their name on it by the end of their term to kind of hoist up and show, you know, this is why you should reelect me. I'll keep doing these kind of things. And those projects are really tied to their ability to control and oversee a bureau where they're doing that within. And so I think they're quite worried that without that, and I mean, you know, if we take commissioners' word for it, if they aren't in the building where they can communicate effectively and work together effectively, then their ability to reach their goals in that limited time frame is tricky. I think they see the clock running out on their current term and they're pulling out all of the stops to make sure it's not their last term. But, you know, time will tell if that actually helps them. So let's leave the conversation there for the day. Dirk, thank you for joining me.
Great chatting with you, Alex.
This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien, and our audio engineer is Stephen Cray. Our music comes from Audio Network. We'll be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org.